Good afternoon. It's Wednesday, the 21st of September 2016, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. I'm your host, Brian Gerrish. With me in the studio, Mike Robinson. Well, first of all, a report on the weather. We've got a little bit of everything. We've got some sunshine reported, cloudy, overcast, and humid. So overall, not too bad.
Okay. Not too bad. Is that where we are with Brexit? I don't think so. But I just wanted to begin by highlighting the Independent today. Brexit areas that backed leaving EU starved of government support, report reveals. And they're highlighting a report by none other than the Fabian Society. And they're saying that basically, well, I'll just read the first couple of paragraphs, parts of the UK that backed Brexit most strongly are also those that have been most starved of government funding, a report has revealed. The research seen by the Independent suggests low spending in less prosperous areas drove political disaffection and amenability to Brexit. So it's just continuing propaganda that the people that voted for Brexit are the people that were less well off, potentially less educated. Therefore, that's the reason for it. We see the continuing scrabbling around for some reason, because certain sections of the British establishment still can't get to grips with the result, it seems.
Yes, perhaps we could also put alongside that, Mike, of course, that the EU grant money, which did pour into the country at one stage, was used by the allegiance of the local authorities in particular. So we had cities and county councils grovelling in order to get onto the EU gravy train, even to the point that they set up their own European-based offices, as did Plymouth. And then, of course, the whole of the political parties on that gravy train were certainly going to vote to stay in the EU because they wanted the money. So it's that quote about the person controlling the purse strings controls the agenda.
Yes. Well, a little bit of light relief before we get into heavier subjects. This is the Mail. Revealed BBC journalists are paid 40% more than their rivals at commercial broadcasters. And I'm saying, well, that's because they tell 40% more lies. And so they deserve to get 40% more salary. That seems reasonable, doesn't it?
I think it's pretty close to the mark. Once they're into the big beast on 40% more than anywhere else, then they're not going to go anywhere else, are they? So
right.
captive propaganda machine.
Absolutely. So the Mail here reporting that senior reporters get £49,000 a year compared to rivals' £35,000 average. That the 7,000-strong news team gets an extra 20%. On top of their salaries for working unsociable hours. And of course, this is not related to the recent charter renewal agreement where BBC salaries over £150,000 have to be made public and transparent, therefore. But nonetheless, information about BBC salaries seems to be getting out into the public domain anyway.
And there's been some changes at the top as a result of Theresa May. So Fiona Fairhead, I think, is being replaced. Is this the part of a restructuring the propaganda machine that we're seeing the restructuring in other areas?
Yes. Right. Well, one subject that I haven't seen reported on the BBC, they may have done, but it hasn't certainly been front page news, is JASTA. What is JASTA? Well, if you're in the United States, you probably know what it is. It is the Justice Against Sponsors of Terrorism Act. It was passed by the House of Representatives on the 9th of September. Neo here saying that really this has started a massive diplomatic row between the United States and Saudi Arabia, because, of course, the main people that are pushing for this are the relatives of the dead from 9/11, who are blaming Saudi Arabia, certainly because so many Saudi Arabians were directly involved in the events of that day. And they're wanting to sue Saudi Arabia for that. So that's been passed by the House of Representatives. Unfortunately, Barack Obama doesn't really want to sign this bill off, this act off. And so there's not only a diplomatic row with Saudi Arabia over this, but a sort of political row within the United States political establishment, because the Senate saying that they have enough votes to force it through if Obama attempts to veto it, which he is doing. So we keep an eye on that one. It's interesting because, of course, Saudi Arabia, the recipient of so many weapons from both the United States and the United Kingdom, many of which are being deployed in Yemen at the moment. So any sort of political backlash against Saudi Arabia at this point in time should be welcomed.
Right. Well, if the truth's not coming out, we've got to do something ourselves. And I'd just like to give an early heads up to the British Constitution Group Winchester meeting. That will be on November the 19th. Tickets, £10. The process for getting tickets is being set up at the moment, but we wanted to alert people to this event. What are we talking about? We're talking about restoring the rule of law. It's quite evident today as we look at what is going on around us. Perhaps today's news is going to be particularly pertinent in this area. We're watching a massive breakdown of law and order in UK, criminals running the country. And it's up to us, the wider public, to reassert the proper rule of law if we're going to stop what's happening. And we'll also just put up a quick advert for the fact that UK Column will be moving north of the border. So Wednesday the 28th, a talk in the Riverside Dunblane, where Mike and I will be joining David Scott from Northern Exposure to talk about some of the current issues. So if you're tempted to travel north of the border, then please do. Of course, if you're already up there in Scotland, we'd be delighted to see you.
We should probably mention at this point that there'll be no sort of normal news on Wednesday and Thursday next week, because we'll be travelling to that and back again. But we will have other plans. We'll do something slightly different during the news slot. We'll look forward to that.
I think it's going to be an extremely interesting, as we've said for some weeks now, very, very interesting information is coming out in Scotland. And one of the things that it shows is that people in the public professions, within the police, within the NHS, within the care system, have clearly had enough of the rot, and they are prepared to speak. Some of them are prepared to speak on camera. Others are prepared to share information. But it is very, very encouraging that in these increasingly dark times, we've got professional people who now say enough's enough. We're going to start saying what is really going on. Will Theresa May do the same, Mike?
Well, global migration, we were talking about this yesterday, and you suggested that people were being driven like cattle across the plains in the United States. The evidence for that assessment continues to flow in. So we now know more about what she was saying in the United Nations yesterday. This, of course, as many of the mainstream media have been pointing out, was her first foreign policy speech since she became Prime Minister. And she was talking about the unprecedented numbers of economic migrants, that they're exploiting the same unmanaged channels as people fleeing conflict and persecution. And she said that she was going to spend millions of pounds on aid to tackle migration. We can define what the word tackle means perhaps in a minute. But £100 million or so, 80 to £100 million of aid spending on migration, 80 million on job creation efforts in Ethiopia, 20 million to fund Somalia refugees returning to from Kenya. And she said that Britain is already using the aid money to provide jobs in various countries, including Jordan, Lebanon and Turkey, for Syrian refugees. So this all sounds very good. She said that the approach would be extended to Ethiopia, and she is attempting to stabilise Somalia. And we're going to send hundreds of military personnel to Somalia in order to fight Al-Qaeda affiliated groups there. We've got two military teams over there at the moment, and we're going to increase that to 30 teams over the next 18 months.
Right, teams automatically means, Mike, you're talking about small cells of people, so this will be special operations on the ground.
Well, exactly. So it'll be gangs and counter gangs type operations.
Well, I was just going to say the special ops teams are not going to be there to help cuddle the indigenous people and make sure they're fed. They've only got one role, and that is either to fight on the ground themselves or to train other people to fight. So that is your gang. Yep. That is your British Theresa May black ops, effectively.
But hundreds of millions of pounds going in to tackle migration. On the same day that George Soros announces $500 million to tackle migration. So what's he saying? Our collective failure to develop and implement effective policies to handle the increased flow has contributed greatly to human misery and political instability. So they've created the problem. They're getting the reaction, or they're trying to incite the reaction in the public. And they're going to provide a global solution to this problem that they've created. They are driving these people. They are hurting people across the planet. So $500 million into migrant and refugee-founded businesses is what Soros is saying. What are these going to be? NGOs on steroids. Migrants are often forced into lives of idle despair while host countries fail to reap the proven benefit that greater integration could bring. I will invest in startups, established companies, social impact initiatives, and businesses founded by migrants and refugees themselves. Although my main concern is to help migrants and refugees arriving in Europe, I'll be looking for good investment ideas that benefit migrants all over the world. So that's what he's up to. It's perhaps unsurprising that in his sort of outlet, the Open Democracy, they're pushing exactly this, but they're pushing the idea that we should be responsibility sharing over migration. So all the countries that are recipients of migrants should be responsibility sharing on an equal basis, because we want to distribute these migrants as far and wide as we possibly can, about the same number going to each host country. So they're saying responsibility for hosting refugees is disproportionately shared. Only particular countries host a greater majority of refugees worldwide, such as Jordan, Lebanon and Turkey. This is corroborative of the fact that South-South refugee movements are more significant than South-North trends. And so they go on. And they go on to talk about the UN summit that we're going to talk about in a second. So let's just recap here. We've got Theresa May spending hundreds of millions of pounds on this. We've got George Soros spending hundreds of millions of pounds on this. And just by coincidence, Tony Blair has announced that he is going to close his commercial operations. And he's now going to concentrate, as he says, the vast bulk of his time on the not-for-profit work that he does. So he's now going to get involved in this as well.
Charity
work. Yeah. This is exactly NGO charity work. This is what's driving the real evil around the world at the moment. And so they are deploying every possible weapon that they've got.
And I think it's significant that Soros has sort of put his head so far above the parapet. These people like using their organisations and people to do the job. If Soros is having to come public and say $500 million to achieve this, if he's going to have to do that in person, it says to me there's a rush on here.
Yes.
That they feel the need to get this program moving pretty quickly.
Absolutely. And of course, at the heart of this program are children. And we pointed this out yesterday, UNICEF pushing out this this image on a tweet: refugee children, refugee scored out, migrant children, migrant scored out. And they're trying to say with a hashtag that children should come first. And I was really highlighting the irony of Roly Post, because she's still being targeted by the United Nations and the European Union over her attempts to expose what's been happening to children over decades. She passed this through to us via Vanessa Bailey today. The European Commission has announced a partnership, shall we say, with UNICEF, and they're saying that they're helping to address learning and protection needs of children affected by the Syria crisis. As a new school year gets underway, they say, that in the Middle East, a major injection of funds from the European Union is boosting efforts to provide learning opportunities and protection to hundreds of thousands of children and youth who have fled the Syria conflict. So this is great. Lots and lots of money going in to protect children. But we should not forget, only a few months ago, I think in April this year, this report from Gatestone Institute, that the European Union and Turkey have treated Syrian refugees so terribly that they found themselves in such a really horrendous situation that they just have become prey for sex traffickers. This report saying that the Turkey, which the European Union considers to be a safe country, that Syrian refugees there have been bullied, coerced, fooled into selling their children for life-saving amounts of money, but relatively small amounts of money. Sorry, Theo, just stick that one back up again for a second. They're saying that $700 to $1,700, parents are being persuaded that their children are going to better lives. But in fact, if we quote from the report, it says girls between the age of 12 and 16, they're referred to as pistachios. Those between 17 and 20 are called cherries. 20 to 22 are called apples. And anyone older than that is called a watermelon. And this has become the fastest growing, according to the report, fastest growing criminal market in Europe, with refugee smuggling the major source of income. And so what's the EU doing, according to that, with in that partnership with UNICEF? They're putting money into keeping refugees in camps, which, of course, makes them places them in a position of being easy targets for these traffickers.
Yeah. So we force the migration problem with that. We get families broken up, the men in particular, often the first to leave in order to try and get work elsewhere. And that leaves mother and the children vulnerable to what's then going to come. So Theresa May, we're going to focus on Theresa May because this new prime minister is clearly not interested in the subject of child abuse. She failed to set up any inquiry, massive cover up over Westminster abuse of children. But the theme that we're seeing here is whether it's in UK or elsewhere in the European Union or the migrant crisis, we are seeing a vicious attack on children. And why is this? Well, the key answer is, of course, that children represent our future. And if this political agenda controls the children, they control the future. So on the subject of children, we pointed out a little while ago that an advertising van had appeared fairly close to the UK column. And here it is. It's saying that basically they're interested in changing children's lives. And it's saying that you can adopt a child and it all changes the child's life and the world. Well, we were fascinated by the van, but we were more fascinated when more vans arrived. This is just over the last couple of days. So these are two massive hoardings that were at a roundabout in Plymouth. And its families wanted to adopt children. And you're needed to volunteer. Help us fundraise children, children, children.
So they're using the World War One propaganda image of, of the guy with the moustache.
Yeah, but it's all about charities, Mike. And we did a little bit of research on this organisation. And more or less they're saying, well, you can trust us because we're Christian, we're Catholic Church-based. Well, we were. We're now a separate charity, but it would appear that children are in unlimited supply and they're desperate to get people in. Well, let's have a look at a close-up. Here's the close-up. We actually called families for children in order to say, is this a very nice poster? Personally, I think it's extremely unpleasant. We asked whether the two young children in the picture had been taken away from their children, from their parents, with the parents willingly giving them up, or they'd been taken under duress. They didn't really want to answer that question. What they said is, well, these two children are part of an advertising agency. So I don't know whether these two youngsters were ever asked whether they wanted to appear in this campaign. But the organisation had to admit that some of its children are taken away from parents who don't want to give those children up. They promised to call me back, but of course didn't call me back. Well, bear all that in mind as we chop to the BBC. Sorry about this, Mike, but it just happened to be one which was easy to go for. So we've got Judge voices fears over crisis in childcare cases. Now, this is Sir James Mumby, the head of the Family Law Division. And he says the number of cases in which children are separated by the application of a council has seen a relentless rise. So isn't it fascinating that just as this starts to hit the wider media, we're seeing a massive rise in adverts where we've got children. I can't say children for sale, but we've got children available. Let's take a look at what Judge Mumby said in detail, because this is extremely interesting. He says, I do not believe that child abuse neglect is rising by 14%, let alone 20% a year. So these statistics are being pushed around. Of course, they're coming from local authorities. They're coming from Barnardo's and NSPCC, for example. But
Right. Well, I was just going to say, to give a little bit of context to that, the statistic was that the number of children being taken into care was rising by 20% a year. And so he was asking, or he was suggesting, what would the reason for that be? And he was saying here that he can't believe that child abuse neglect is rising by that. So there must be some other reason for it.
Indeed. Well, we'll just put up part of this. This is exactly what you're getting at, Mike. Judge Mumby went on to say, so this cannot be the sole explanation. It follows that local authority behaviour must be playing a significant role. Well, if we think back to UK column reporting, because this never appeared anywhere else, we've got to come back to Staffordshire County Council, where this gentleman, we've mentioned him before, but think about it in the context of this latest headline, John Tradewell, head of Staffordshire Legal Services. And he was talking about new powers given to local authorities through the Local Government Act, giving them real power and capacity. A local authority has power to do anything. Now, you can go and read the whole of his comments if you go and have a look at the Association of Council Secretaries and Solicitors. And they were talking about the general power of competence. But there's the statement. According to this man, a local authority has the power to do anything. And why were we interested in Mr. Tradewell? Well, we were very interested in him because we were able to film his social services team literally snatching a baby out of his mother's arms, and with the mother screaming. This was a video that we showed. It shocked many people. That baby was disappeared into the gulag of the social services system. And what did Mr. Tradewell do? Well, very quickly, he was threatening the UK column and others with legal action for daring to expose what was going on. So we sit here and we say we were right. What is actually taking place is that local councils now believe they have the absolute right to simply take people's children. And once those children are taken, they disappear into a gulag where we know many of them are being abused by people who are supposed to be protecting them. So let's reinforce this and come on to the subject of Melanie Shaw. We've reported over the last couple of weeks that Melanie is in Foston Hall Prison. We don't know the charges that she's on, but the situation has now become much worse because there has been limited contact from Melanie to some members of the public, in which she's got some really horrific things to say. Basically, everything that was going on with her in Peterborough Prison seems to be happening in Foston Hall. So she is being threatened, harassed. She has been threatened with gang rape by a group of male prison officers dressed in riot gear, interestingly. And we understand from another totally separate source that a woman was recently gang raped in her cell by such a group of prison officers. At the moment, the head of the prison, the prison governor, does not want to respond to any inquiries from the public or indeed the media. There appears to be a close down. But what Melanie is having to say is absolutely outrageous. So we still don't know what her charges are. There was supposed to be a court case concerning Melanie in Peterborough last Friday. That did not appear to have taken place. Court staff very confused about whether there was or was not a case. And we now understand that Melanie herself had absolutely no idea that such a case was taking place. So at the moment, she's technically still on remand. She's now about 20 weeks inside prison, no charges. Why is this taking place? Because Melanie like many other people in Nottingham, has the information of the trafficking and abuse of children by very dangerous individuals, including British politicians. So if we just pop this one up to remind ourselves, effectively, a child abuse survivor, a very important one for a knowledge of how the abuse system works, has been disappeared. This is not South America. This isn't some third world system. This is Theresa May's prison gulag, where people who know too much about child abuse are disappeared. We can tell our audience today that Melanie has sent over 100 letters, of which we believe 4 to 5, maybe not even that many, have actually reached the people she's written to. She's received a few stamps. None of the money that has been sent to her has been put into her account. So we can only presume that that money has been stolen within the prison system. As I said, she has been threatened. She has been threatened with rape. And we can say now for certain that she has no proper legal representation and certainly none that's been making any application for bail. So those members of the public trying to help her in a lay legal capacity are also being blocked from speaking directly to Melanie Shaw or indeed visiting her. This is the absolute status of Britain in 2016. And of course, it follows the protracted period of Theresa May as Home Secretary. But wait for it. We reported yesterday on this husband and wife team, Red Snapper Recruitment. They were in the press because they were supplying people who were effectively building up cases in order to take British soldiers to court for alleged crimes in Iraq. Red Snapper Recruiting. And somehow this husband and wife team have managed to treble their turnover to a mere 20.5 million in 3 years. Now, you've been involved in business a while back, Mike. I have as well. Business is very hard. It's particularly difficult, or was, to get public sector contracts. And yet this husband and wife team are hoovering up contracts from the Ministry of Defence and also the Ministry of Justice. Well, they got questioned in Parliament over the last couple of days by the Defence Subcommittee. This is local Plymouth MP Johnny Mercer. He was a bit of a hesitant chair, but we're going to encourage people to go and look at this video interview. This is Mr. Jared from Red Snapper. Appeared to be particularly nervous when he was asked what services his company was actually supplying. And one of the things he admitted is, well, he supplied people, but the Ministry of Defence paid for them to fly overseas to Iraq. Why are we interested in Red Snapper? Well, here they are. Here's the Red Snapper group. And if you have a look at their website, they're into everything. They're into the Ministry of Defence. They're into justice. They're into probation service. They're into cyber security. That's pretty good for a husband and wife team.
And they're providing personnel into all these areas.
They're providing personnel. And we were particularly interested in that they've got a specialist criminal justice section and they're providing probation services, which by an amazing coincidence brings us straight back to Melanie Shaw, because Melanie had the dubious pleasure of meeting some Red Snapper employees at a stage where she was terrified because of the harassment by the public services and the police in Nottingham. Well, we tried to speak to Red Snapper this morning. Their website says, need more information or want to say hi, get in touch with us. But when I called Mike, they certainly didn't want to say hi to me.
Right.
Pretty close to putting the phone down, but not quite. So have a look at this yourself, because aside from criminal justice, they're helping to run a rant conference. That's correct. A rant forum and a rant conference. I'm not sure what's going on here, but I think I've got a rough idea. Is Mr. Soros supporting this team? I don't know. So this is a little bit rough and ready, but we're just going to try and take you through a bit of conversation that Melanie Shaw had at a stage where she was very frightened of people coming near her. She was out of prison, but very frightened in her own home because she'd had raids from the police. She'd been threatened in her home. She has two ladies who turn up on the door, and they say to her, they're probation. So in this dialogue, the red is Red Snapper employees and the white is Melanie Shaw. There's an altercation at the door because basically they don't appear to have proper ID, Mike. And Melanie Shaw is saying, well, where's your badge? And Red Snapper says, I have a visitor's badge, but nothing on it. There you go. And her colleague says, and I'm Eve. We've actually met years ago. You don't remember me. And I have a visitor's badge, but I can tell you who she is. So you've got an extremely vulnerable person being faced by somebody without a proper identity badge. And we've got a casual, oh, I can vouch for her. Yeah. This is outrageous, outrageous. So they come inside and they ask Melanie how she's feeling. Melanie says, I've got a patch of pneumonia on my right lung. In fact, that was a gross understatement because she was extremely ill at this stage. And I living in a house with no proper facilities because that had all been cut off. And she still had a very severe leg ulcer. So what do these ladies say? Well, thank you. Yeah, we've got a seat. And Melanie goes to sit down. And basically, the Red Snapper lady says, I'm a probation officer. So Melanie says, are you a real one with a contract? Yeah, I'm a real one with a contract and a badge. Melanie, you get mileage? She says, yes, that's right. And I'm not on a 0-hour contract. But you're trying to get a job with probation. So one of the employees says that a colleague has got a job with probation, and she confirms that. And Melanie then says, well, who employs you then? Well, I'm employed by an agency. What are they called? Well, it's Red Snapper. So Red Snapper employees, no proper ID, frightening a woman who was already terrified. And on it goes. I thought this was remarkable from Melanie. She says, Red Snapper, that's professional. It sounds like a kebab house. Now, I'm going to say for people who don't know Melanie, this woman has been through absolute hell. But this is a reflection on the, what's the word, the character of this lady. Let's just follow it through quickly. They say they're here because of the court. The court has put you under an order. And here's the confusion, because Melanie's saying, but you're employed by Red Snapper. So there's a conversation about what Red Snapper is. She says, I'm employed by probation. Melanie is saying, but you're employed by Red Snapper. So think about this with the fact that, you know, we have a very vulnerable person here. So Red Snapper is saying, I am employed by probation. They are the people. And Melanie's saying, well, when are you going to get a job with them? Because she's saying, I haven't got a job. So note the nervous chuckle. This is a transcript from a recording of this conversation. Melanie again, so you're employed by Red Snapper. And the woman says, I'm a probation officer, Melanie, but employed by Red Snapper. Yeah. So I'm sorry that was a little bit rough and ready, but see it against the context of an extremely vulnerable woman inside a house with no proper facilities, no proper heating, no proper food, threatened by the police breaking into her house, and two women turn up who claim to be probation, but apparently they're actually being employed by Red Snapper. And what do we know? Well, we know now that Red Snapper is hoovering up millions of pounds of contracts around the court and probation. Who are these people, Mike?
I think there's a bit of common purpose networks at work there.
I think there is. So we'll ask our audience today, if you can help us with research about this company. We're particularly interested in the individuals running it. There seems to be very little information available. How do you come out of nowhere to get massive government MOD and Ministry of Justice contracts? And why would you want to be lining up cases against the very British military personnel who've put their lives on the line in these created wars overseas. There's something deeply unpleasant here, Mike.
Yes. Well, good news, because the Bank of England has announced its next Future Forum event, which is going to take place on the 14th of October. And this is the second one they've held. And these, of course, are absolute propaganda events, attempts to make the banking system and the central banking system and the Bank of England in particular, to make them appear to be, you know, palatable to the general public. This event, they say, will bring together people from different sections of the community to discuss the Bank of England's role in promoting the good of the people of the United Kingdom in times of change.
I'm feeling a little bit cynical here, Mike. I'll stay quiet for a while.
Nauseous might have been more appropriate. So what's on the agenda? Well, they're going to ask, how can we improve trust and understanding in the Bank of England, and why should that matter? How can the Bank of England help students better understand its role and impact on the economy? How can the bank, with the responsibility for monetary and financial stability, support the most vulnerable members of society? Because we all know that that is the prime motivator for everybody working at the Bank of England. What are the key economic challenges that smaller firms expect to face in the future? How can we improve access to finance for small and medium-sized enterprises in the current environment? And what challenges do large companies expect to face in their ability to access funding and manage risk through the banking and insurance sectors? And finally, how can the Bank of England support technological innovation in the future? And of course, mainly they're looking at blockchain as a technology and other cashless mechanisms. We look forward to that. We'll report on it when it happens. But undoubtedly, we're going to get some really balanced and carefully considered content from it.
I may be wrong, of course, Mike. Do you think that possibly this is a Bank of England publicity stunt to help boost its image at a time when financial matters are coming home to roost?
That is exactly what it is. But even better news, Brian.
Good.
Because this is International Day of Peace. Now, looking around the world, you might think to yourself that there's not much sign of this peace, but this is World Peace Day. So we should celebrate that. And the United Nations is celebrating it by promoting the development goals. So there's 17 of those, and we should be absolutely happy about this. The theme for today is the Sustainable Development Goals, Building Blocks for Peace, because they are building blocks for peace, according to them. They were unanimously adopted by the 193 member states of the United Nations at an historic summit of world leaders in New York in September 2015, is what they say. The new ambitious 2013 agenda calls on countries to begin efforts to achieve these goals over the next 15 years. Now, of course, the first goal that they claim is that they will end poverty in all its forms everywhere by 2030. So we're doing very well along those lines. So of course,
14 years, we're going to end poverty everywhere.
Absolutely.
So this is somebody living in their own reality.
Well,
Mike.
So anybody that believes this nonsense is clearly on cloud cuckoo land. So there must be something else going on. But they are absolutely pushing this in every media outlet that they can at the moment. This is a typical example: Sustainable Development Goals, Building Blocks for Peace. This year, the international. This is the key point. But what are the Sustainable Development Goals really about? This is another sort of string to the bow of global governance, and it's not really about saving people from poverty and lack of education and these kinds of things.
We're getting a number of individuals putting pieces of the jigsaw together. Just in UK, having a look at what the government is doing, and their feeling is that it is the British government that's attacking the wider public, and their agenda is to remove people who are a problem for society. So you want to get rid of the old, you want to get rid of the infirm, you want to get rid of people with learning disabilities. So a very, very cold, callous agenda unfolding through the NHS and the care system. And of course, as we've shown again today, the target is absolutely our children, because if the government can get full control of children, that's the problem virtually done as far as they're concerned. So we'll give you a reminder for this British Constitution Group meeting. restoring the rule of law. We are at a point now where it is blatantly obvious that the proper common law in this country has been pushed to one side. We are seeing courts being run as place of businesses. We're seeing judges who think that the courts are theirs. And of course, we're seeing the sidelining of juries. And we're certainly seeing the fact that juries are denied the knowledge that they have the ability by their decisions to make law. So this is the key part of the British Constitution Group meeting. And in the afternoon session, we are going to be exploring what people can do, knowing that they are operating literally in a lawless country. I still sit here, Mike, and think to myself, here we are in Britain in 2016, all those years of the propaganda that Britain was such an upstanding country with justice and morality. And what are we watching around the world? We're watching disgraceful acts carried out not by people in those local nation states, but by members of the British cabinet, of course, helped by Obama's administration. It's up to us, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Okay, that's it for UK Column News today. Thank you very much for joining us. And as always, I'm going to say, if you watch us, listen to UK Column News, and you're not a subscriber, we need your subscription to help us run this organisation and what we do. We want to expand. We want to put out more news. We can only do that with your help. So please consider taking up a subscription or possibly making a donation. It's up to you. It's up to us. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.